It is interesting when you think about Moses, and which is going to be part of the subject I will be covering as well, and his brother Aaron. As you're reading through, you will see that neither Aaron or Moses went into the promised land. Aaron made a little mistake with something like a golden calf or something like that. I don't know. And so he continued to do his job, but God didn't make a big deal out of it. But if you read, you're reading the kind of a historical account there in this one chapter, and it just listed, okay, they went here, and then they camped here, and they pitched there, and they had a thing, and all of a sudden then God said to Aaron, come up to the mountain. And that's where he died, at 123 years old. And that's all it says. And it goes on from there. And of course we know about Moses striking the rock. So only person that I am aware of, I think there were two. I think it was Eliezer. But I know Joshua was the only other one that went over into the promised land. Out of all those people. And the rest of them all died in the wilderness. It wasn't because God forgot about them. But it's just the way God chose to work with that situation. Well, we are very interested in seeing what the lessons that God has given us from the book of Exodus. And to reinforce that, I'd like to reiterate some things here in 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter. So let's go to 1 Corinthians 10, and we'll kind of use this as a little bit of a guide. And again, this isn't maybe the normal outline or way I would present a sermon, but we want to do this from an educational point of view and use these examples that God has given us and specifically tells us to remember as helps for our preparation for Passover, which certainly is a very key and a very, very important day in our lives. Okay, 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter, talks here in verse 1 about the fact. Now, Paul understood this very deeply, and he said, I would not that you should be ignorant how that all of our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea. And in verse 2, and we were all, or they were all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea. So they went through a type of baptism, the symbol of baptism there. And they did all eat the same spiritual meat. They had one teacher, and that was, of course, the God, Jesus Christ. And that's also interesting. If anyone wonders whether Christ was the God of the Old Testament, we need to read verse 4. And did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of the spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. So we know very clearly that Jesus Christ was the Lord of the Old Testament. And of course, from the first chapter of John, we know that he was the one the Father used to create us and the world and get this whole thing in motion. Verse 5, and with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now, he says in verse 6, and again, this is kind of the way we would state it. Now, these were done, or these things were our examples. These things happened in the Old Testament thousands of years ago to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. So we have five things here that I numbered out. We have the issue of lusting. And in verse 7, neither be idolaters, as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and to drink and rose up to play. And we know that that led to some wrong conduct, and led to the next conduct here in verse 8. Neither let us commit fornication, so sexual sins. And some of them committed and fell in one day, 23,000 people. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of serpents. And then finally, neither murmur, complain, gripe, criticize, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed of the destroyer. So you have five things here. You have lusting, you have idolatry, you have fornication, you have tempting God, testing God, just poking God, so to speak, murmuring, complaining towards God, and not having faith in what God says. And then verse 11, now all these things happen to them for examples, and they are written for our admonition. Now that's important for us to think about, because they are written for us, and he says, upon whom the ends of the world are come. And that little piece of space junk that hit Russia, I just want you to think about that. You know, you start reading in Revelation the plagues that are going to come on the earth, the fact that the sun is going to, you know, turn dark and moon's going to turn to blood and all these things. And the earth's going to shake from these violent earthquakes, and giant hailstones are going to be falling out of the sky, and people are going to be trying to hide in the rocks and wish they were dead. This is just one little piece, although it wasn't that little. It was about 7 tons, thank you very much. And and it seems like it was starting to kind of break apart. And then the shock wave from these different pieces was the thing that really did a lot of the damage. But that was one thing. And here were these people, you know, in a room, and all of a sudden the door blasts in, or all these windows shake and break and come smashing down. It gets people's attention. Can you imagine a whole sky full of those things falling down at one time? Just believe me, when God wants to get people's attention, he has the ability to do it. And it mentions here in the Old Testament about how he would, and I've read that to you before, how he would fight the battles for you. And then he said, I will send the hornet ahead of you. And we laughed about that, because you can see these people in the body armor and all the fancy things, and then a swarm of hornets attacks and crawls underneath. You're not going to be doing much. You're going to be stripping that stuff off as fast as you can, or whatever you can do to get away. So it's a situation here where these things were done in the Old Testament for our benefit, and we need to look at those, and we need to think about them, because the very next chapter here in 1 Corinthians talks about, in chapter 11, about examining ourselves and about the preparing for the Passover and having the right viewpoint. And so these things help us to do that. And the thing that's interesting is, because we're human beings, you can read the actual physical actions of human beings and what they did to get themselves into these problems. And you can begin to see the thinking process that these people went through and the mistakes they made in the way they were thinking, which led them in the wrong direction. Now, I could tell you, you know, don't do this or don't do that, but it's harder to comprehend if someone just says that, as opposed to actually having an example that you can look at, read about, and see what people are, how they conducted themselves. And that's the reason, one of the many reasons God did this thing with Egypt and with the Israelites. And there was a myriad of things. But these happen to be five characteristics, or five things that Paul is telling us that we need to be aware of, and not to have those things affect us. He said, verse 12, wherefore let him that thinks he stand take heed lest he fall. And he also says that no temptation, verse 13, has taken us or such as is common to man. In other words, we all face basically the same kind of temptations or tests. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted or tested above what you are able, but will always, with that trial, make a way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. God is not going to overwhelm us. With this in mind, let's just go back to an important principle here for that number one principle listed as lust. Let's go back to James, the first chapter. And this gives a very clear explanation of the way sin works and how we can head off the way we normally humanly think. This is the order of thinking. This is the way our human mind responds to basically everything. And this is carnality that we're going to see here. This is the normal carnal mind and how it operates. This is what we have to overcome. We have to not think like this. We have to resist thinking this way. Now notice what it says in verse 12. Blessed is the man that endures temptation. In other words, resists temptation. For when he is tried, when the temptation is presented, this is verse 12 of chapter 1 of James, James 1, verse 12. For when he is tried, or when he's tested, when that temptation is in front of him, and we all are surrounded with this all the time, 24 hours a day, for when he's tested or tried or tempted, he shall receive, or pardon me, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to them who love him. So when a man endures that, when he resists it, when he overcomes it, and you know that's what it says in Revelation, talks about the man who overcomes will be part of the kingdom. He's the one who's going to receive the crown of life. And what's also important to remember, and I've mentioned this and I can't emphasize it enough, when he says, to them that love him. And in 2 Thessalonians, it talks about the ones who love the truth. Because the ones who love the truth are going to be saved, and the ones who don't love it, of course, God turns them over to believing a lie. It's an incredible situation. But we have to truly love the truth, not do it because we're afraid not to do it, not do it because it's, you know, the Pharisaical thing to do or the checklist righteousness. It's something that we do because we see the great benefit of God's way as opposed to the way of the world. Now it goes on and says, let no man, or don't let anyone, I'm reading King James here right now, let no man say when he is tempted or tested, in verse 13, I'm tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither does he tempt any man. So he's not the one putting it out there. He doesn't have to. We are the ones who have it already built into our brain. It's in there, believe me. And we fight it all the time. We look around and we are tempted to do this, or we tempted to do that, or, you know, we would like to do this. Now, in verse 14, but every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Or the New King James says when he's drawn away of his desires. It's the human reaction when we see something we want or we desire, we would like. It says every man is tempted when he's drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Okay, so you look at something that is wrong to do or wrong to have or whatever it may be, but it isn't according to God. but your desire, your lust is drawing you in that direction. You are enticed. Okay? Now, this is the next thing that happens. And God doesn't have to do a thing. He's we're surrounded by this. This is how our mind works. But so that's the first thing. You see something that you lust after or you desire. And then, he says in verse 15, then when lust or desire has conceived, when it begins to grow, you begin to think about it. That looks pretty good. Boy, I really would like that. Yeah. In fact, the more I think about it, the better it looks. All right? This is the way the normal mind operates. Now, some people, for example, lust after or desire money, and they desire it so badly that they're willing to do anything to get it. Now, I knew a man who became a millionaire, and this was before he was in the church. And he's told me, this is many years ago, he went broke 3 times trying to become a millionaire because he grew up poor. And he said, I'm never going to be poor. So he would take on 3 jobs and work very, very hard in order to get a cash amount so he could start a business. And he would do a business, whatever, and it didn't work out. And he went broke. But he didn't give up. And he went out and got 3 more jobs. And he did this 3 times, and finally he was successful. And he eventually had a very nice manufacturing company, and he became a millionaire. And he told me, you know, he said, I learned one thing. Once you earn so much money, you know, for all the things that you desire, the rest of it is just a matter of keeping score. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you can only drive 1 car at a time. And, you know, at that time he was driving a big Lincoln. He had a house out on the lake. He had a house back near his farm that he had near his business. You know, he had all the toys that you'd want, a boat and all these things. And he said, you can only drive 1 car at a time. You can only eat 1 steak at a time. You can only enjoy so much. I mean, that's all you can do. And it said, the rest of it is just a matter of keeping score. And I said, well, what if somebody were to offer you, or he used this example. He said, if someone years ago had offered me $1 million to walk a tightrope across Niagara Falls, I would have done it. And I said, you would? He said, yeah, because he said, if I didn't have $1 million, it wasn't worth living anyway. That's how he looked at it. Now, that's a strong desire to be something, to have something. He wanted to be wealthy. Now, of course, when he became wealthy, he found out that it really wasn't what he thought it was cracked up to be. I mean, he enjoyed it, but it wasn't. It never changes people the way they think. You know, it's just like the old song back in the 50s, is that all there is? And the answer is, yep, that's all there is. You still get up every morning and put your pants on just like the other guy, and you put 1 foot, you know, 1 shoe on at a time and whatever. Now, your shoes might be worth more money, but they're still shoes. So that's just the way it is. But that was an example to me of a very, very strong desire or lust for, because people think when you use the word lust, Old Testament, I mean, Old King James, you know, they think strictly sexual. Well, it is just desire. Desire to have what you don't have. And that overwhelms people and it gets them into big trouble. So it says in verse 15, this is the order of things. First you look at it and you say, hey, that looks interesting. Then you start thinking about it because it conceives. When something has been conceived, it begins growing. it brings forth sin. And sin, in other words, now you begin to be overwhelmed by this. You really want this. It brings forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, brings forth death. Now, ultimately, anyone who does not repent of sin, and I'm talking ultimate, you know, the end of the program, way at the end, when Peter talks about the earth being consumed with fire, anyone who has not repented won't be there. They'll be dead, gone, burned up. But that's after everybody's had a fair chance. But ultimately, that's exactly what it will do, bring forth death. Do not err, he says. Don't make a mistake, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, you know, no wavering, neither shadow of turning. God does what he says. He doesn't welch out on his promises or go, oh, well, new rules, you know, all that kind of thing. Of his own will, he begat us with the word of truth. So it was God's desire to put us on the earth and to create us, to redo the earth and put us on the earth and start this whole program, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. So he wants us to be part of his family. That's the reason he put us on the earth. So it's his desire for us to succeed, but we all have human nature and we have to overcome that. We have to choose between good and evil. And that's a constant decision we have to be making in our lives. We see something that we might want or looks good or whatever seems good and isn't, then that's when we have to be like the man in verse 12, the man that endures or overcomes temptation and doesn't give in to it. All right, let's go back to 1 Corinthians 10 then again. And we'll just kind of leave it open. Well, we could put a marker there or whatever. I'm going to keep the two Bibles here that I'm going to use. But anyway, that's one of the things that Paul warns us about. And he wants us to observe the conduct of the people in the Old Testament and what they did to fall into these different traps of lust, of being an idolater. Now, idolater doesn't mean that you necessarily just have an idol sitting in your house. You bow down to it when you walk in. When I was in high school, I loved cars. Dave Baldoff is a car, what we call a gearhead. Okay, well, I was one of those, too, when I was a kid. And my buddy and I used to started out with motor scooters. And even before that, when I was about, I don't know, 12, 13, we built a little go-kart out of this old lawnmower engine. And it ran, and it would go 15 miles an hour. And I just kept doing those kind of things. I just loved doing it. And I loved my old car I bought. And I rebuilt the engine, and we put a different transmission in it. And I went to the gas station one time after I had overhauled it, and I had it on the road because I bought it when I was 15 for $50 with my paper route money. And I used the whole year to rebuild the engine, so it was ready to go when I got my license at 16. And I loved that old Oldsmobile with the V8 in it, and I modified it, and I did different things. But my dad accused me of washing it so much that I was going to wash the paint off of it. And I cleaned the whole engine compartment. And, I cleaned the whole engine down when I rebuilt it. And I had washed it all down. I repainted everything. I waxed the inside of the engine compartment. And I remember taking it to the gas station the first time the guy started to fill it up, and he opened up the hood when I'd gone inside the office there for a minute. And all of a sudden, he'd opened the hood up. Nobody touched my engine. And he yells to the other guy, "Hey, come on out here and take a look at this." He couldn't believe. He said, "You could eat off of this thing." Now, that's what I call an idol. And that was very, very important to me. So, I began to realize, you know, at a young age, when I finally started to understand more about conversion and repentance, that I was an idolater. I had idolized this piece of metal, you know, this thing, and that I spent a lot of my time thinking about it, and it was kind of the focus of everything. And it was just a simple example of how you can idolize things without, you know, this concept of just having an idol and bowing down to it. You can idolize anything, and you can make it the most important thing in your life. And that's why Christ said in Luke there, when people were considering being baptized and following him, he said, "You have to love less by comparison everything, mother, father, yes, and your own life also, or you cannot be my disciple." Luke 14. So nothing can be more important, that this is the lesson, nothing can be more important to us than God and his way of life. The other things are nice, and they're fun to have, and they're nice to enjoy, but it cannot be the focus of our attention. All right, let's go back to, we've already been in James. Let's go back to Exodus 16. And I'm going to be kind of skimming over, jumping around here a little bit, because we can't read everything. But I do want to read you this story, and we'll be seeing these examples fulfilled of these five things that Paul said to watch out for. Okay, and starting in chapter 16, prior to this, of course, God had already brought Israel out of Egypt. They'd gone through the Red Sea. And in chapter 16, now they were, in verse 1, they were in the 15th day of the second month after they had departed from Egypt. So they were now getting into the second month where God was guiding and directing them, providing what they needed. And verse 2, and the whole congregation of the children of Israel, what did they do? They murmured against Moses and Aaron. Only the beginning. And, of course, we see that as a number five thing that's listed. Neither murmur, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed. They were criticizing. They had no faith. They weren't trusting God. They were looking at the physical circumstances. And this is what happens to us as well. We don't like to categorize our lack of faith maybe as murmuring, but that's what it really is a lot of times. We begin to do what God says. We're following God. We're beginning to go down the trail, and we run into difficulties. We run into some hard times. We run into a trial. And then we say, verse 3, and the children of Israel said, and we say the same thing in principle, "Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, that we sat by the pots of meat where we had and ate bread to the full, for you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill us, this whole assembly, with hunger. I was going along real good before, and now you want me to obey you, and look at the mess I'm in. I just lost my job, and people don't like me at work because I believe weird things." And, of course, I opened my mouth and tried to convert everybody, and that didn't help very much. And so I've got problems. I got have difficulties. Why didn't you leave me alone, God? And I've seen, and I've told you this before, I've seen people in visiting with them when they come to understand the truth. When they look at what, first of all, they see and they do understand what the Bible says. and they see what God requires of us and how he wants us to change our lives. And they get this look in their eye like, oh, 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 I'm not ready for this. I'm not ready for this. I can't do that. I'm going to have to change everything. Yes, that's right. You are. I'm not ready for this. So they try to push it off. Well, how do I know God's really calling me? I've had people ask me, you know. They try to find a way out. I said, well, you just have to ask yourself the question. Do you understand? And they think a little bit and they go, well, yeah. I said, well, the Bible says you can't understand unless God calls you. Oops. So there they are. But not everybody is thrilled when they come to understand. Some people are the other way. They get all excited, just like the example of the sower, and they don't. And their problem is a lot of times they don't have a good foundation. They need to make sure they have a good foundation. They just react emotionally. Oh, this is great, wonderful. Well, you've got to have a solid understanding of and prove things for yourself. So this is the spiritual principle. Here were these people that got down the road of training here and of conversion, and they ran into some problems, and they started to murmur, gripe, criticize, and they were unhappy. And this was over their belly because they didn't have enough bread to eat. And so it turns out in verse 7 he said, in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, for he hears your murmurings against the Lord. But what are we that you murmur against us? Moses is saying to them. And at the end of verse 8 it says, your murmurings are not against us, but against the Lord. So they thought they were complaining against Moses, but they were really griping against God directly. So verse 9, Moses spoke to Aaron and said, say to the congregation, children of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your murmurings, your griping, your criticizing. And he's looked, next verse he said, they looked out towards the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in a cloud to reinforce the fact that, yes, God did hear it. And he said in verse 12, I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. He said, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God. So he sent quails, and then he also sent what's it, better known as manna. And they ate that for 40 years. That's a long time. Fried manna, boiled manna, every kind of manna you can imagine. And so then Moses warns them in verse 19 of chapter 16, don't let anyone leave it until morning. Notwithstanding, they did not listen. But some of them left part of it till morning, and it bred worms, and it was stinking. And, of course, Moses was pretty upset with them. He said, so they gathered it every morning so much. But then on the sixth day, and we know about this, God said, you get twice as much on the sixth day, and it won't spoil, because you don't want to be out there collecting this on the Sabbath. You want to stay at home and rest and take it easy, spend it with your family. So in verse 23, and he said to them, this is what the Lord has said, tomorrow is the Sabbath of a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake today, and boil what you will boil, and lay up for yourselves all that remains to be kept until morning. So they laid it up in the morning, and it didn't stink, nor did it have worms in it. And Moses, verse 25, said, eat that today, for today is the Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. But, in verse 27, now it happened that some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather, but they didn't find anything. You see human nature? They don't listen. We don't listen. That's the principle. we don't have faith, so we complain quietly to God. Well, why are you letting this? Why are you doing this to me, God? God's not doing it to you. He may be allowing a test to develop, or you going through whatever, but it is to teach us to trust Him, because He promises, just like He, you know, we can read the story and go, oh, well, we wouldn't do that. God, we know that God is bigger and He's powerful and He would have taken care of us. We'd have trusted Him. Well, maybe and maybe not. But spiritually, these are the pitfalls that we fall into as humans. So they went out and tried to gather anyway. They didn't listen. And verse 28, and the Lord said to Moses, how long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? See, for the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Isn't that interesting? Therefore, he gives you on the sixth day bread for 2 days. Let every man remain in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. And see, this is really the same way Christ explained it. He said, man was not made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man. Verse 29, the Lord has given you the Sabbath as a gift, a day to rest. And so verse 30, and so the people rested, the ones who were paying attention, on the seventh day. And the house of Israel called this food manna. And in verse 35, it says that they ate it for 40 years. Until they came to inhabit the land, they ate manna until they came to the border of the land of Canaan. Okay, so we see murmuring as an example here of one of the things to watch out for. But it's really just a lack of faith, not trusting and believing what God says. Okay, chapter 17, and the congregation of Israel set out on their journey from the wilderness of Sin according to the commandment of the Lord, and they camped in Rephidim, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but there was no water for the people to drink. So, once again, verse 2, the people contended with Moses, give us water that we may drink. And Moses said to them, why do you bug me? Why are you complaining to me? Why do you tempt the Lord? And that was the fourth thing I listed out here by Paul. Don't tempt Christ as others tempted. In other words, they're just in God's face. Not only complaining and murmuring about it, but he says, why do you tempt the Lord? And the people thirsted there, for verse 3 of chapter 17, for water, and the people murmured. So murmuring and tempting God kind of go together. Why is it you brought us, in the same record, brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? And so Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, what shall I do with these people? They're ready to stone me. Well, then God said, in this case, in verse 6, strike the rock with the and the water will come out. And so he did so, and the sight of the elders, and of course. But then in verse 7, he says, so he called the name Massus and Meribah because of the contention of the children of Israel, and because they tempted the Lord, saying, this is how they tempted God, is the Lord among us or not? They didn't trust. They didn't have faith. Has God left us? No. I want you to think about when you're going through a difficult time. Have you ever had that thought? Did God leave me alone? Yeah, you did. I have. You wonder, what happened here? It seems like God just walked away. Things aren't going very well. And that's how we tempt God. God didn't go anywhere. God's there. But we tend to do that. So this is why this example is here. When they had it tough, and it was tough for them. You want to be out in the middle of the desert somewhere? and no water, that's going to make you uncomfortable. It's going to make you unhappy. It's going to make you grumpy, real grumpy, especially when your family, your kids, I'm thirsty. You don't have anything to wash with. Life isn't good without water. Got to have it. So it got to them, and they griped and they grumbled. And then they began to wonder, is God really with us? Or did he just dump us out here in the middle of nowhere now? He brought us all this way, but now he's dumped us off, and who knows where he went. So they were tempting God because they were wondering if God had left them high and dry. And of course, then we know that God, we already know that God answered that prayer and answered that command and gave them what they needed. God always does. He promises in Matthew 6 he will do that. He may not do it as fast as we desire or as fast as we think or the way we think it should be done, but it always gets done. Okay, then the example where Moses held his hands up during this battle, once again showing the principle that when the hands went down, it wasn't, in other words, the principle of not of looking to God as opposed to not looking at God. You look to God, you trust God, you're totally hooked, you know, to trusting God and relying on him. And when you stop relying on him, you start losing because God just says, okay, you don't want to trust me? Well, then you can work this out on your own. Well, then just have a nice day. And when you want to trust me again and let me do it for you, then connect with me again and I'll be happy to help you. So as long as you're connected to God, things are going to go well. May not be easy, but it'll work out. But if you want to do it on your own and you don't think you need God, then disconnect. And God is patient, and he sits back and says, all right, well, let's see how you do. I mean, that's what Adam and Eve, we did with them. They wanted to do what they wanted to do. So God said he could have just destroyed them right there. But he chose not to do that. He just said, all right, fine, but you can't stay here, of course. So he got them dressed and sent them on the way. And I'll check back, see how you're doing. You want to do it on your own? Wonderful. Have a nice day. So that's the principle here. Again, it's just a matter of trusting God and looking to him. But a good example, nonetheless. You can think about these. We, human beings, we can connect with these things that we see to help us understand the spiritual principles. Then a really neat thing in chapter 18. Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, verse 1 there, heard of all the things that God had done for Moses and for Israel and the people and how he brought them out of the land of Egypt. So he packed up his things and he brought with him Moses' wife and two sons, of whom are Gershom and so on. But anyway, he came there, and the bottom line of that whole thing is he's watching Moses sitting there in the tent with this giant line of people. And this is what even happened early years of the church back in the 60s, which this lady remembers. She remembers me, by the way, when I was still young. Thank you very much. That's embarrassing. But anyway, I have another lady who remembers me even younger than you when I was a teenager. So anyway, there would be, my dad was ordained an elder, and he would sit back in this room after church, and the people would line up, and they would wait, you know, because that was, people were scattered all over the place. They'd drive 2, 3, 4 hours to get to church, and they had these questions, and they wanted to counsel with somebody. And the minister couldn't be to everybody's place all the time because it was such a long distance. I mean, he tried to get out and visit everybody he could, just like when we first went to Omaha there. We had a shoebox of letters that were 2 years old, and we drove 70,000 miles that first year going to all these places to try to contact and catch up on all these visits. Anyway, Dad would be in this room after services, counseling with one person after another. Be a big, long line. They either wanted to be anointed or they had counseling and whatever they wanted to do. So Moses' father-in-law, obviously being a pretty good organizer, looked at the same thing Moses was doing. He says, look, this is going to kill you. And I'm putting it in modern English. You can't keep doing this. You're wearing yourself out. You're wearing out the people. The people have to stand out there. You have to have a more efficient way. And this is the principle that we've tried to follow in the church. And that is, he said, you want to have, in verse 21, he said, you want to have captains over thousands, captains over hundreds, captains over fifties, and captains over tens. And then, of course, in the New Testament, we have deacons and elders and so on with different responsibilities to help take care of this situation. And so, verse 24, Moses being a wise person and taking the counsel, wise counsel, he heeded the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he said. And life was easier. Life was good. Then he only had to deal with the really hard cases, verse 26. So they judged the people at all times, and hard cases they brought to Moses, but they judged the smaller situations themselves. So that was an interesting example of how we need to pay attention. And even Moses, as powerful a position as he had, was humble enough to realize and listened and did, he said he did all that he said. Okay, and then chapter 19, they were now, in verse 1, they were in their third month after leaving, and they were in the wilderness of Sinai. And so Israel camped, in verse 2, before the mountain. Now this was Mount Sinai. And Moses went up to God the Lord, in verse 3, and he called him from the mountain, saying, thus shall you say to the house of Jacob and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, just keep that in mind here. I hadn't planned to mention this, but let's go back to Revelation here, if I can find this. I better go here. And I think you all know where I'm going. Let's see if I can find that real quick here. All right. Okay, in chapter 12 and verse 13. And verse 12, it talks about Satan having a short, knowing he had a short time when he's cast to the earth. And verse 13, and he's filled with wrath. And the dragon saw that he was cast to the earth, verse 13 of chapter 12. He persecuted the woman. Now notice the word persecute, not tribulation. He persecuted the woman. That's us, which brought forth the man-child. And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place where she is nourished for a time, times and half a time from the face of the serpent, from the great tribulation, which is about to come. That's the next thing. First we get persecuted, Matthew 24, then comes the great tribulation. Okay, and then, of course, the serpent tries to get the church, in verse 15, but the earth helps the woman, and the church is saved. And in verse 16, and he swallows up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. Okay, now there's that example. And here is a clear situation back now in chapter 19. God uses that same example here. Have you seen what what I did to the Egyptians, verse 4 of chapter 19, how that I carried you on eagle's wings, brought you to myself. Now, it's a principle. Now, believe me, brethren, we have had all kinds of speculation about the place of safety, how God's going to get us there. We had people speculating, yeah, we're going to lease a whole Air Force here, get a whole bunch of 747s, and we'll fly to the place of safety because it says on eagle's wing. Come on. Did the Israelites go, you know, did they lift off the ground and fly to the wilderness? No, they walked on dry ground through this ocean. You know, that's how they got there. It's a principle. You know what we're going to have to do in order to find out what God is going to do for us? We're going to have to wait and see. Because we don't know. We can speculate, but the Bible does not tell us specifically. And we can get hints here and there, but we know one thing. This is the overriding principle. God promises to take care of us. And he says that in Revelation. We just read it. And it talks about it in Matthew 24. It does say some people are going to be killed as a witness, but the majority of the church will be protected. And that's the way it is, period. Now, we can be like Israelites, and we can murmur, and we can doubt, and we can wonder. But God said, verse 4, I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Verse 5, and now therefore, if you will obey my voice and keep my covenant, that's what's important. Don't be worrying about whether you're going to go on a 747 or now a 787 with a bad battery. You don't want that. I mean, being a pilot, I love airplanes, and they'll get that fixed, and that's not going to be a problem. But, you know, just don't worry about that. He said, you obey what I say and keep my covenant. Then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. God owns everything. He has total power. There's nothing he can't do. And anybody who starts murmuring or doing one of these five things, going against what God says, you know, tempting Christ by saying, is God here or not? You know, maybe he ran off, maybe he's on vacation, or they complain, or they seek after other gods by being an idolater. All these things is just, you know, ridiculous. God says, the earth is mine. I own it. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Ultimately, that's what these people are going to have an opportunity to do when they're resurrected in the second resurrection. They will have an opportunity to be part of the kingdom, and to be priests in the kingdom, and to be a holy part of the holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. Now, they didn't qualify for it at that time by any means. They wanted the good things, but they weren't willing or even capable, because they didn't have God's Spirit, to really obey. They were overwhelmed all the time by their human nature, as we see. And that's what we're fighting. And that's why these things were written. And one of the many, many reasons why God went out of his way to do what he did in Egypt. I mean, that was a big undertaking. Nothing like that has ever happened since. Just that one time. Think about that. I mean, he did, you know, he had to do the flood and a few other intervention, but this was a major thing, all recorded in detail, showing all of these different aspects, his faithfulness, his power, you know, need to obey what and trust God. That's what we need to be doing. And verse 8, and all the people answered together, all that the Lord has spoken we will do. Yeah, you've really proven that, all right. Okay, have we said the same? We agree to do what God says, but we're weak. So we need to be working and overcoming, which means repenting as we overcome things and then pick ourselves up and proceed ahead. We should always be moving ahead. Well, in verse 11, let's see here. Well, verse 10, he said to Moses, Go to the people and sanctify them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes, and let them be ready for the third day, because on the third day the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. And we know that mountain was smoking, and it was trembling. And in verse 16 at the end, it says the people were in the camp trembled because of this power that was there. We should read verse 16. And then it came to pass on the third day in the morning. Now, this is why Christ said, look, if somebody says I'm over here in the desert or I'm here or whatever, don't listen to him. Because he said, like lightning, east to west, there's going to be a big trumpet. Was there any question where God was here? Then it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there was thundering and lightning and a thick cloud on the mountain, and the sound of the trumpet was very loud, so that all the people who were in the camp trembled. There wasn't any question where God was, and they were scared. Verse 18, now Mount Sinai was completely in smoke because the Lord had descended upon it in fire. Its smoke ascended like the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaked greatly. And when the blast of the trumpet sounded long and became louder and louder, Moses spoke, and God answered him by voice. Then the Lord came down upon Mount Sinai on the top of the mountain, and the Lord called Moses to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up. Okay, and he goes on and he begins to reiterate the Ten Commandments, and the people say, oh, please, we don't want to hear God anymore. We were scared to death. You talk to us. Because over in the next chapter, after he gets done laying out the Ten Commandments, in verse 18, now all the people witnessed the thunderings and the lightning flashes and the sound of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they trembled and they stood afar off. Then they said to Moses, you speak with us and we will hear, but don't let this God speak to us, lest we die. And Moses said to the people, do not fear, for God has come to test you, and that his fear may be before you, so that you may not sin. That was the purpose, to test or to try. And the definition of that, you could use the synonym examine, the definition of that is to inspect closely, to test the condition of, to inquire into carefully, to interrogate closely, like examining a prisoner, or to test by questioning in order to determine progress, fitness, or knowledge. Synonym to that also would be scrutinize. So this is what God did to be able to find out whether these people were willing to really do what he says and help them understand. I mean, he didn't just throw these things out, but he slowly educated them through all the things that happened in Egypt, and then bringing them through the Red Sea and giving them food and giving them water and all the things that he did. This was all part of the training program, that his fear may be before you so that you may not sin. So anyway, Moses went ahead then and began to talk to them about, rather than God. All right, then he's asked to go up on the mountain. So Moses goes up on the mountain, and God begins to give him chapter after chapter all these principles of how to live in the community, what laws concerning violence, concerning things like even animal control, responsibility for property, justice for people, chapter after chapter. Finally, we get, the covenant. And finally, at the end of chapter 24, so Moses went into the midst of the cloud and went up into the mountain, and Moses was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. Okay? He then continued to... I'm wrong about that. He didn't go up on the mountain here until... And God had given all this information to him. And chapter 24, was incorrect there. I'm trying to skip over this, and I got ahead of myself. In chapter 24, we'll back up here. So Moses, verse 3, told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments, and all the people answered with one voice, all the words which the Lord have said we will do. And Moses wrote all the words of the Lord. Okay? So I assume that that became the book of Moses. And verse 7, towards the end of it, he says, all that the Lord has said we will do and be obedient. Now that was what they hoped to do, but of course they didn't. In verse 12, then the Lord said to Moses, come up to me on the mountain. And be there, and I will give you tablets of stone and the law and the commandments which I have written, that you may teach them. So Moses arose with his assistant Joshua, and Moses went up in verse 13 to the mountain of God, and he said to the elders, wait here until I come back. And indeed he left. See, he left Aaron in charge, and Aaron and Hur are with you, and if anybody has a difficulty, let them go to him. Well, now the glory of the Lord, verse 16, rested upon Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it 6 days, and on the seventh day he called Moses out of the midst of the cloud. The sight, verse 17, of the glory of the Lord was like a consuming fire on the top of the mountain in the eyes of the children of Israel. And then Moses went up for 40 days and 40 nights. Well, in the meantime, God proceeds to talk about the Ark of the Testimony, the gold lampstand, all the different things in the tabernacle, the kind of clothing that Aaron should wear, and the priests and so on. And that goes talks about the tabernacle itself, and I'm not going to go through all of that. The altar, chapter 27, 28, more of the tabernacle, the things that the priests should be wearing, chapter 28. And then we get, chapter 29, same thing. God's laying out all these things, the offerings, Aaron and his sons that are going to be consecrated to be priests, and holy anointing oil here, and the altar of incense. And we finally get towards the end of chapter 31, and in verse 13 he says, speak also to the children of Israel, saying, surely my Sabbaths you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you through your generations. He didn't say Sabbath, he said Sabbaths, plural. And it's important for us to remember that it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. Verse 17 is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. In 6 days, now again, it's something that was made at the beginning. He just repeats this like he did in the commandment. He said, for in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and he was refreshed. And when he had made an end of speaking with him on Mount Sinai, he gave Moses two tablets of the testimony and tablets of stone written with the finger of God. And then the fun begins. So now when the people saw that Moses delayed, chapter 32, his coming down, and this is where in the movie where, I always forget the actor's name, Who? No, not Charlton Heston, but the other actor who is the squirrely little guy. Yeah, he says, "Where's your Moses now?" Okay, so we got to do something about this. And, of course, Aaron, being the strong individual that he was, I'm being sarcastic. "Now when the people saw that Moses delayed his coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, 'Come, make us gods that we should go before, that should go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him.'" We don't know. Where in the world? This guy's been up there for 40 days. He's probably been eaten by something or burned up by that fire up there. And here we are out in the middle of the desert. And, of course, then they immediately hearken back to their paganism. That was a brilliant idea. Let's make a god. Now, think about that. How soon they forgot. You know? They tested God again. Well, they were about to break the other principles here that 1 Corinthians shows. So, Aaron, worrying about his own skin here, and Aaron said to them, well, give me all your golden earrings and all the things that your family has and bring them to me. So all the people broke off the golden earrings and they brought them to Aaron. In verse 4, and he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it and engraved with an engraving tool and made a molded calf. Then he said, "This is your God, O Israel, that brought you up out of the land of Egypt." That's why he didn't go into the promised land. So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord." Now, that's kind of a contradictory thing. We don't know who he was referring to there, but I'm assuming he was trying to cover his tracks. Then they rose up early on the next day and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offering, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. And we understand what that was. They got into all kinds of immoral things, and the Lord said to Moses, "Go get down, for your people whom you brought out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. And they have turned aside quickly," verse 8, "out of the way which I commanded them." And in verse 9, the Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people, and indeed it is a stiff-necked people. Now therefore," verse 10, "let me alone, step back, so that my wrath may burn hot against them and I may consume them, and I will make of you a great nation." And then, of course, Moses pleaded with God not to do that. So in verse 14, God relented. The Lord relented from the harm which he had said he was going to do to the people. But Moses hadn't seen what God had seen. But he was about to. And he got down there. He took, in verse 16, he took the tablets and the writing. He had these tablets under his arms that God had engraved with his own finger. And when Joshua heard the noise of the people as they shouted, he said to Moses, "There's a sound of war in the camp." And Moses said, "No." He said, "It is not the voice of those who shout in victory, nor is it the voice of those who cry out in defeat, but the voice of those who sing that I hear." So it was as soon as he came near to the camp that he saw the calf and the dancing. Moses was hot. He was unhappy. He wasn't just angry. His anger was hot. And he cast the tablets out of his hands and he broke them at the foot of the mountain. Then he took the calf. In verse 20, and he made that they had made, he burned it in the fire, he ground it to powder, he scattered it on the water, and made the children of Israel drink it. Moses said to Aaron, "What in the world did the people do to you that you have brought so great a sin upon them?" And Aaron was like, don't get so angry, my Lord. Don't become hot. You know the people that they are set on evil. It's those people. For they said to me, it's all their fault, make us gods that we shall go before us. Now, isn't this a typical thing? Human nature again. Do we want to admit, yeah, I really messed up. I really made a big mistake, Moses. I am repenting. No, you got to justify yourself. You have to make an excuse. Oh, it wasn't me. It was those evil people. They wanted me to make, they said, let's make gods that shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what's happened to him. And, you know, implying, well, you got to admit you're up there a long time. And I said to them, whoever has any gold will give it to me. So he said, they gave me the gold, I threw it in the fire, and out popped this calf. That's what he said. I cast it into the fire, and this calf came out. I don't know how that happened. So God is just, I'm sure, shaking his head. It's like, oh boy. So then Moses says, all right. He said, verse 25, he says, now when Moses saw that the people were unrestrained, for Aaron hadn't restrained them, in other words, hadn't kept them in line, to their shame among their enemies, then Moses stood at the entrance of the camp and said, whoever is on the Lord's side, let him come to me. And all the sons of Levi gathered themselves together. And then they were given the command, take their sword, and to go into all these different tents and kill every, says in verse 27, thus the Lord God of Israel let every man put on his sword on his side and go in and out from the entrance to entrance throughout the camp, and let every man kill his brother, every man his companion, every man his neighbor. In other words, anyone who is doing what he shouldn't be doing. So the sons of Levi did according, and that's when 23,000 men fell, and that's what Paul referred to. Consecrate yourself today, in verse 29, to the Lord, that he may bestow you a blessing this day, for every man has opposed his son and his brother. And in verse 30, and it came to pass on the next day that Moses said to the people, you have sinned a great sin. So now I will go up to the Lord. Perhaps I can make atonement for your sin. So, jumping down to verse 35, so the Lord plagued the people because of what they did with the calf which Aaron made. He didn't pull any punches here. It was clear Aaron made it. And then he goes on and reiterates the fact in verse 3, about going into the land flowing in milk and honey, for I will not go up in your midst. He was going to send the angel instead, lest I consume you on the way, for you are a stiff-necked people. And he repeats it again in verse 5, for the Lord said to Moses, say to the children of Israel, you are a stiff-necked people. You go tell them that. I could come up into your midst in one moment and consume you. Now, therefore, take off your ornaments, and so on. So, it was not a pleasant day. And then he told Moses in verse 14, he says, my presence will go with you, and I will give you rest, because this was not a restful environment. I mean, you know, what if you were Moses? Here you're with God for 40 days and 40 nights. You got Joshua with you. You come down off the mountain. You see this. You just lose it. You take the tablets that God made. You break them. You grind up this thing and make these people drink it. And then thousands of people die. This is not what I would call a low-stress job. Okay, you want to be in charge? Good. That goes with the job. Not a good place to be. Not a pleasant thing. And that's why God says, I'm going to give you some peace here. I will give you rest. But in chapter 34, the Lord said to Moses, okay, you're going to have to cut out the two tablets of stone, like the first ones. I cut the first ones out. Now you're going to have to cut out these yourself, and I will write on these tablets the words that were on the first tablets that you broke. So he renews his covenant, and he goes on. But these are examples that show us, physical examples that show us how God, or how our human nature thinks, and that we see how these people lusted, how they were idolaters, how they committed fornication, how they tested or tempted Christ, and they murmured and complained, but they were done as examples for us. And I'm sorry I went over time here, but I hope that these stories that we need to review, they're in the Bible for a purpose, and they are very helpful to us because it gives us a physical example of how our brain works. And it doesn't always work in the right direction.